You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, welcome in. What a basketball game last night, Arkansas and Alabama. Double overtime. Darius Acuff goes for 49 points. We'll talk more about basketball on tomorrow's show. Today we've got Bubba Carpenter here in studio. We're going to talk Razorback baseball and the game against Xavier tomorrow. Not just a game, a three-game series here in Fayetteville. I want to tell you first that our baseball podcast is brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto. They're a third-generation family-owned business serving Northwest Arkansas since 1976. Just like great baseball programs, H&R is built on consistency, trust, and doing things the right way. No shortcuts and no gimmicks. Darius Acuff, he broke a school record for most points in an SEC game set by Todd Day. You were on campus with Todd Day. What do you remember about Todd Day as a basketball player?
He was awesome. Yeah. That whole team, they were so much fun to watch. Yeah. Loved every one of them.
He had so much attitude.
Yeah.
I mean, he played with a I don't know if it was attitude or a confidence or a swagger, whatever you want to call it. But, I mean, it was one of those things that was very unique to him, I feel like. Like there hasn't been another Todd Day come through the program.
No. And, you know, I think of Todd Day. I think of Scotty Thurman the same way, just clutch, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that whole Lee Mayberry, Big O, I loved all those guys, yeah. So it was fun.
Yeah, Acuff, he broke Scotty Thurman's freshman scoring record last night in terms of most points in a freshman season, and he's still got like probably, I don't know, 8-10 or more games left when you think about the rest of the regular season and the SEC tournament and however far they can get in the March Madness.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We were doing on Wednesday nights, I do a hit tracks. I'd get some of the high school kids in there, and we play hit tracks games, and mm-hmm. we do different drills. We try to challenge them. And at one point, I'm in the middle of trying to coach them up, you know, talk about a different attack angle for this pitch. And I look up, and no one's over there, and they're all over there by the TV, and they're like, wait, what's going on?
That was incredible. What a great game. Just unfortunate for Arkansas that they came out on the wrong end of it. So Dave Van Horn spoke to reporters this morning about the Xavier series. And the big news, I thought, that came out of it was that Cujillo Aloy is doing better with his hamstring, and it looks like he's probably going to be able to play this weekend. That's the bat you want back in the middle of your lineup.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you take a bat like that out of the lineup, and you can tell. But a bad thing about it is, Matt, is it's going to be in the 40s. There's going to be a 15-mile-an-hour north wind. You know, of course, now they have the technology. They can keep that thing warm. But, yeah, you want to be careful with that. But definitely it's good to get him back out there.
I wonder if they play him in right field right away. Maybe they put him back as a DH this weekend.
Yeah, so if you put him at DH, then you got to take Souza out. And you know Souza's going to be in that lineup. Mm. Souza's going to get it going. And when he does, he's going to be dangerous. So, I mean, what do you do?
You know? Yeah, I don't know.
It's kind of tough.
Yeah, I did ask Van Horn this morning about, like, what did he think about the other right fielders who played last week. You know, Christian Turner got a lot of playing time with Cujillo out. And then Zach Stewart, he started. He didn't play very much. And Van Horn even said that he felt a little bit bad that he took him out when he did. He got one at bat. And then he comes back up in the fourth inning, and the Tarleton State had changed pitchers, and now it's a lefty-lefty matchup, so they bring Brendan Kleiman off the bench to create a lefty-righty situation. And so Stewart really only played like three and a half innings, something like that, down there in Arlington. But with Turner, he's got the speed in the outfield to, you know, I don't know. I don't know how you handle it. I wonder, you know, something I was thinking about was, remember Logan Maxwell last year dealt with the hamstring injuries all year long. And I know that he's not the first person who's dealt with hamstring injuries in baseball, but I wonder if there was anything they learned about that situation with him that they might be trying to apply to Cujillo this time around.
I think the difference is Logan Maxwell dealt with that like his whole career. That was kind of it was something he dealt with before. But you know, you mentioned Christian Turner. There was one thing that we didn't talk about before. He made a play in that TCU game. You know, he goes into right field for Cujillo. There's a kind of in that Bermuda Triangle down the right field line. Mm-hmm. A really tough play. He had just got inserted into the game, and the ball will always find you. It was a tough play where Kozier's going back. Turner's coming in, and at the last minute, he called Kozier off. I don't know if you remember that or not. That's a gutsy play for a freshman because he had to go a long way, and to have the – you know, to have the confidence to call Kozel off on that play. Kozel probably would have gotten there, but it says a lot about him as a player. There's no fear. He doesn't seem like there's any fear in his game because, you know, we've seen in the past right fielders not come and get that ball. And what ends up happening when they're not aggressive out there, because that's the right fielder's ball if you can get there. I just thought it was – that stood out to me as a play it was a really good play. It showed the kind of outfielder he is, type of player he is.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the play, right? I
mean, yeah,
that's what everybody talks about.
It really is. It's a tough play. I mean, you got guys converging on it. You know, the thing is though, that ball is always going to filter back to the field, and with that second baseman coming across like that, that's a really tough play for second baseman. They tend to overrun it. It's an easier play for the right fielder, but the right fielder, when you're running in, Matt, you don't think you're going to get to it because the angle you're running, it looks like the ball's way over here, but it ends up filtering back, and so. You know, he stayed with it, made a good play. I liked it.
Gomax Gajillo, I mean, I thought he was hitting really well. He was. It's a small sample size, but he was 3-for-8 in Arlington. Hit that big home run against TCU. I felt when he hit that home run, okay, they're going to come back and they're going to find a way to do this, and obviously they just didn't. I liked the way he was swinging the bat though down there, and you know, again. Like, you wonder, does Texas Tech, does that get to 11 innings if he's in the lineup? Is Tarleton State, is that a 3-1 game if he's in the lineup? I mean, we saw what he did last year to non-conference pitching. I have a feeling he probably had a little bit more damage in him had he not gotten hurt.
I think so. And it's unfortunate, but I think Dave did the right thing. You know, you don't want it to be something that lingers. So get him out of there, you know, and get him ready for when the games that really matter. But I agree. I think if he's in there, it's probably a different. There's probably another run or two on the board because, you know, the way he stands at the plate. I was watching it with my two sons, and we were sitting there watching the game. And the way he stands at the plate reminds me of Stanton with the Yankees, except he doesn't strike out as much as Stanton. But just that threat, he just looks imposing at the plate. And, look, you're going to get some swing and miss with him. You got to take the good with the bad. But if a pitcher makes a mistake, don't leave something up over the middle of the plate. He will hammer it.
You know, I went out to Massachusetts last summer. Remember, I sent you a video while I was out there. I watched. Yeah. I was there at his first game when he was playing for Bourne. And I heard somebody say this out there. They said – that Cahill has the angriest swing on the Cape. I mean, it is an angry swing. Think about the one that he hit. Were you there the day that he went, what was it, 479?
Yeah.
Center?
Yeah, I saw it.
An area code home run is what I called it.
That ball, I think it went farther than that. I mean, I need to get out there and measure that. That seemed like it went farther than 479, but that But it is. It's I jokingly say every once in a while, swing hard in case you hit it. Sometimes kids start to think too much. You just want them to cut it loose, and that's definitely Cahill. He just he cuts it loose. He never gets cheated.
Maybe that was the ball that brought the armadillo out.
Could have been.
Have you seen this video?
I saw it. I guess last night. I did watch the end of DVH's press conference today, and I thought it was hilarious. So, Dave, if you need a game camera, let me know. I can hook you up, buddy.
I bet he knows where to find some. And I asked him the question. By the way, I got a little self-conscious when I was asking the question. Like, how am I going to pronounce the word of this animal? Because if I say armadillo, I know my friends back in Scott County will listen to you. So, you know, so proper armadillo. But then, you know, you say armadilla, and – well, you sound like a redneck. Armadilla. How do you say it?
Never really thought about it. Armadillo. Yeah.
Armadillo.
Yeah, I spell it with an A, not an O.
Yeah.
I'm from West Fork, though. But, hey, they get out in my field. I have a baseball field at my house, and they get out there and dig holes. So when I do that, I don't pick them up and carry them to the river.
You should.
Well, they make it to the river, but in a different way. I don't know if I can say that or not.
In several places. You ever picked one up with your hands?
Never.
Would you ever think?
No,
that?
I do, but
well, like when they're living.
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think I would, because so we'll get out in the field and mess with them. Like Dalton will get his airsoft gun out there and we'll chase them. And when they come at you and you get in their way, they're going through you.
They're
and
mad.
They grunt. Yeah. They sound like a pig. They snap at you. Yeah, it's not a. I don't know. Kozel's a different animal though. He's not scared of stuff
no,
like that.
No, it's. So. And I mentioned. So you heard me ask the question to Dave. It was the last question at the press conference, And it was about like just all the critters that they have out there. I mean, yeah. like, you had the raccoon game. You remember the groundhog during the super regional mm-hmm. that got out there?
Yeah.
There's this great video from, I don't know, probably 6-7 years ago when they got one of those alligator snapping turtles loose in the stands. You ever had any experience with one of those?
Yeah, so I live on the White River, so occasionally they'll leave the river and come up towards our house.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're a lot of fun to mess with. Get you a stick and mess with them, and they'll hiss and they'll bite.
They got those tails.
Yeah.
They got spiky tails. They swing around at you.
Yeah. So yeah, they're
you don't want to mess with those.
They're fun to play.
We got one of those. I made the mistake one time of actually, we got one in our backyard. Which I don't know why we got one in our backyard. Number one, I don't know how it got in there because we had a fenced backyard. And number two, we're like at that time, we weren't real close to any, you know, water necessarily. And so how this thing got in our backyard, I don't know. But our son was back there playing, and so I decided to call, I think I called Arkansas Game and Fish. And I wish I hadn't have, because, well, if you kill it, you blah, 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 blah. And yeah, it wasn't a very fun experience with the snapping turtle.
Can't believe you called. You just
I made a mistake.
Yeah,
I won't make that mistake again.
Call Cam next time. Cam will take Cam care Coastal. Of
you. Yeah. Call you.
Yeah.
Call Dalton.
Yeah.
With the airsoft gun. Yeah. There's been all kinds of critters out there. It's Critterville. There's a great picture. Andy Soup, who's our photographer, he's our chief photographer here at the newspaper now. He got this great photo early, and God, this probably been 10 or more years ago, of a hawk flying over Baum Stadium during a game with a snake in its mouth.
Really?
Yeah, it's like Wild America out there.
That's
at
cool.
a baseball game.
That's really cool. So. I'll never forget the raccoon and the dude that grabbed the raccoon. That guy's my hero.
Yeah.
Of course, he ended up getting
You know bit. The backstory to that, don't you? Like the backstory to how the raccoon even got into the – so there was a family of raccoons that were living above – the old baseball office where Kelly Moore used to be. So when they built the Hunt Center, you know, they moved her office down to the Hunt Center. And so they were living up there. And for whatever reason, somebody had propped that door open. That's where they keep all the flags that you can rent out and take out into the hog pen. So the door is open, and this raccoon falls through the tile of the ceiling. Well, it's got babies up there. And so it's trying to figure out how to get back to its babies. But it runs out into the ballpark, and that's when all the chaos starts. And remember, they took it out of the ballpark at first, and then it ran back through an open gate, and I think it bit a second person before they finally got animal control to come out and take care of it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll never forget that.
There's all kinds of stuff out there.
Yeah.
It's amazing. All right, back to baseball here. So Cahill's going to play right field. What do you expect to see from him this weekend? When you take two games off like that, is there a lot of rust this early in the year?
No, I don't think so. I think we talked last week about as a hitter, you know, you take a couple days off. It's good for you to kind of slow the game down a little bit. As an outfielder, he needs to be out there. And Baum Walker plays a little different. Wind blowing out this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Ball's going to be carrying. It might be a little harder in right field, but I think he'll do fine. I just don't want him to get hurt. You know, with the weather being cold like this, I know they'll look out for him. If there's any issue, they'll pull him out. But I think it's going to be good to put him back out there. You got to go out there, and more balls you can see off the live bat, the better off you are.
So when you get that north wind as a hitter, that's at your back,
mm-hmm.
but it's also cold.
It's all right.
You think it's fine?
Yeah. You know, with the wind blowing out like that, it's a good feeling as a hitter. It really is, especially, I mean, think of Cahill with the wind blowing out. A pitcher mm-hmm. does not want to you just can't make a mistake to mm-hmm. him. No, you execute pitches, you can get guys out. I wonder, you know, I need to talk to some of the pitchers about that, if they mind. I know some guys don't mind pitching into a wind because mm-hmm. it actually makes their stuff better.
Hmm.
Like a Colin Fisher, him throwing into a wind,
mm-hmm.
I mean, his ball's going to sink more, it's going to cut more, breaking ball's got more bite. I just wonder about that. If it affects them, you know, but as a hitter, it just gives you a little extra boost. I compare it to like when we're playing hit tracks games. Had a team struggling last night, so I put it on boost.
Mm.
And just by boosting it to 5 – all of a sudden, they were just like foaming at the mouth and just hitting rockets all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's kind of like that as a hitter. You get that wind blowing to your back. Now, what you got to do is you got to stay within yourself because mm-hmm. then, you know, if you're trying to hit bombs to left field and they're throwing sliders down and away, that's a bad combination.
The cold wind there, it feels like it's probably worse for the fielders than it is for the hitters because mm-hmm. you've got the way the stadium circles around there back behind home plate, and it's also down, you know, the field is like low. Right. I mean, it's kind of down in a real low area, and so I feel like it kind of blocks the wind if you're there at the plate. Mm-hmm. But then there's a certain point, and I don't know if it's at the pitcher's mound or I don't know if it's at the, you know, the corners in the infield. At some point, that it starts to hit you and it really starts to affect you.
I think it starts about shortstop because I remember Vejiva last year looking really cold at shortstop
a few times. Remember he and Souza, and you had Iredell, who's from Australia, and Cahillo too. Like all of them, I mean, they looked like they were going out to climb Mount Everest for some of those early games.
Yeah. In the booth we're filling it's freezing up there. I don't know, that wind like comes over and comes up into the booth and
circles around.
Phil and I, we agree on a lot of things. There's a few things we don't, but we like the windows open. I don't feel like I'm in a baseball park if my window's closed. So I don't care how cold it is in the booth. But it gets cold in that booth. You can usually judge it by how cold it is in that booth. But I don't think the guys, once the game starts, they're not cold. Mm-hmm. They're out there having fun playing baseball.
See, I like to have the windows open too. And Oliver Grigg, who's the media relations guy, he likes to have them open in the press box. There are a lot of cranky people in the press box, so when you open the windows. I think there have been people who've retired because they didn't like to have the press box windows open.
Really?
I may be wrong about that, but maybe they had a good pension or something.
Yeah,
but maybe they left and went to a different profession. Boy, you get some people, they don't like to have those windows open. They don't want to be cold.
You just don't feel like you're in a ballpark, do you? I don't feel like I'm part of the game.
Yeah.
Which I'm not. I'm sitting in a booth talking about it on a radio. But I feel like I'm in the game. If I can, I want to hear the ball go into the zone.
Yeah.
I want to hear the ball off the bat. I want to hear all the sounds of the ballpark.
Yeah. I want to hear the crowd.
Yeah.
You hear some great stuff in the crowd.
Through the headset, a lot of times it blocks the crowd. So a lot of times I'll take this ear off so I can hear the crowd better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the crowd mic picks up a lot of it, but it misses a whole lot. So I like to know what's going on out there.
I do some play-by-play for football, for high school football. And the worst are the press boxes that have windows that don't open. Like up in Springdale, they've got, you know, they're both of their stadiums. They're the same stadium, just in different colors. And we had a game up at Harbor one time, and it was in a driving rainstorm. All that water's hitting the press box. Well, we can't see anything. We needed a windshield wiper to be able to. I don't know who's got the ball. I just see little colors, just real, you know, blurry running around the field. So I like having the windows open for sure. It does help, especially like for what you guys do when you're doing play-by-play. Hey, I want to tell you that Southern Loft believes your home should reflect your unique personality. That's why they offer a wide variety of stylish furniture pieces that are perfect for any taste. Whether you're looking for a new sofa for the living room, a sleek dining table for your kitchen, they have just what you need. When you're looking for that piece of furniture that reflects you, visit Southern Loft at 3155 North College Avenue in Fayetteville or call 479-856-6100.
Is this Southern Loft right here?
I don't know. I may get in trouble for saying if it is or it is.
Oh, no. Sorry.
How about we pivot to this? Xavier beat East Carolina last week. They come in here. I feel like this is a dangerous team. And, you know, they went to East Carolina and they won. And they've got two position players who are potential Big East Player of the Year. You know, they're that caliber candidate player. They've got Connor Mish at first base. And they've got Clay Burdett, who I believe is a transfer from Ohio State, in the outfield. And neither of them played last week. I think one was in concussion protocol. One was dealing with an oblique strain. I don't know what their status is going to be for this week at Baum. And they've got another outfielder who I think was expected to be a contributor for them, who broke his hamate bone within the last however many weeks and is going to miss some time with that. So for them to go to East Carolina, and we know that, you know, Cliff Goodwin, he's had really good teams out at East Carolina that have been right on the verge of getting to Omaha, and he's been a coach that's been a rumored candidate for a lot of big-time jobs that have come open. To go out to ECU on opening weekend without two or three of your best players and win, boy, that caught my attention for this Xavier team.
Yeah, and the thing is, they don't seem scared. They're wanting to play the best competition they can play. I think they feel like they kind of got snubbed last year, didn't they? In
probably the last couple of years.
I mean, they were RPI was top 40, you know, somewhere in the 40 range last year. They didn't make it. I think they're really trying to bolster the RPI. A win here would do a lot for that.
I think there were a lot of people who thought last year they were the first team that was on the outside looking in at the tournament. Yeah, on Memorial Day.
There were a few of those last year that you look at and you kind of scratch your head, but I think it's always like that. But the thing I noticed, looking at different articles, they talk about how big and how physical they are.
Yeah.
The coach goes out, he recruits that type of player. They're big in the weight room. I saw they've only stolen two stolen bases, two for two, I think, so they're probably not going to run a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Hit 10 home runs already. Have no idea what the weather conditions were, but you know, so I have a feeling they're going to be that kind of team that's going to get up there and bang a little bit and swing the bat a little bit. They have made some errors already. I think they've already made 8 errors. Mm-hmm. Once again, it's early on, so you can't read too much into that. I mean, or maybe you can. Who knows what the surface was they're playing on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can kind of get a feel for what kind of team you're going to get. And I think pitching-wise, I think they've got a couple of veteran guys that know how to pitch. Looks like they're going to pitch to contact. You're not going to overpower you. And so, you know, I think as hitters, it goes back to that we've got to do a better job of getting pitches in our zone early in the count. Mm-hmm. You know, good hitters are defined by what they don't swing at. And I think we need to do a good job early in the count of hunting our pitch and doing damage.
Go back to how big they are and like that big physical. I was talking to Joe Healy this week. He works for D1 Baseball, and he actually wrote the fall report on Xavier. He said one thing that stands out to you is that, like, they look like football players when they're getting off the bus. That's like they are big and physical and kind of they've got that imposing look to them. I don't know if that means anything, you know, but they look good getting off the bus, apparently. Yeah.
Well, they look good in a team picture, look good in their unis. That's the thing I notice about SEC. Like, even down there at Globe Life Field, look at our players compared to the other teams, even Oklahoma State. I mean, they've got some physical guys, but look at our guys. Our guys, I mean, Hunter Bell's done a phenomenal job transforming these guys.
Yeah.
Our pitchers, our position players, I mean, they just look like dudes.
Yeah. They talk a lot about, and this is one of those things that, you know, I guess it's real important when you've got a strength and conditioning coach, a sport-specific strength coach, is how, like, they're doing things that are built toward being better baseball players, not just bigger, you know, jacked up athletes, but it's everything they do. He talks a lot about speed training and how that impacts everything for a baseball player. It's kind of an interesting, anytime you get a chance to chat with Hunter Bell, and I don't know how much you've had a chance to talk with him, but like you come out of like your head's kind of spinning with all the different data that he's given you about he uses to build bigger, better baseball players.
I look at Hunter Bell like I look at Matt Hobbs. You talk to Matt Hobbs about pitching, and, I mean, your head spins. The guy's phenomenal, just the way he talks about just
– and he can articulate so well.
Yeah, he doesn't – like some of these guys try to use all these big fancy words and all this terminology. Mm-hmm. Matt can talk to someone that knows nothing about pitching and talk to them in a way where they walk away from it thinking, wow.
But that's what makes a good coach.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we were talking – I was having a conversation with him one time about the smart mound. You know the smart mound that they use where it can basically it's
– that force mound.
Force mound, yes. Yeah. And so they're registering how much force a pitcher is putting on the ground as they're letting go of a baseball. And so basically they're able to, with that and the different motion capture cameras they have, they can basically get like a 360-degree from the ground up image of what's going on with a pitcher as he delivers a baseball. So Hobbs was telling me, you know, the force mound was put in under Wes Johnson when he was here. The guy who actually developed and built this down in the Little Rock area went to high school with Wes Johnson. Mm-hmm. And so that was the early partnership. Arkansas, I think, might have been the first team that had one of these. And so when Hobbs comes in, he's telling me this story. He says, okay, this is great. How do I use this to make Connor Nolan throw a better fastball? Right. And, you know, and then he got into talking about, you know, we've got all of this data. How do I communicate that data and simplify it in a way to actually help the pitchers understand what I'm talking about? And it's a great point. You know, it's like you can have all these data engineers and, you know, people that come in and read the numbers, but can you actually take that and then very simply, maybe not so simply, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Can you simplify it to the point that you can make a pitcher digest it and become a better pitcher because of it?
Yeah, and adapt
that's the essence of coaching.
Yeah, and adapt it to the different pitchers because it's not cookie cutter. Every guy down there on our staff is different. So it's not the same. You know, and I call a lot of these guys your YouTube coaches. They go out and they watch these YouTube coaches, these YouTube videos. They try to use all these big words. They don't know what the hell they're saying. And the person they're coaching has no clue what they're saying, but they sound like they know what they're talking about just because they're using all these words. But to be able to simplify it to where the player understands it, and because I'm one of those, the body responds to the mind. You have to understand it, and if they're speaking a language that you don't understand, I mean, we take it for granted sometimes that these guys, they're great college players, but maybe they don't understand it completely. I played with major league guys that could absolutely crush the ball. I'll tell you, Larry Walker, love him to death. Probably one of the best hitters I ever saw play. He couldn't tell you how to hit, but he could do it. I mean, it was incredible to watch him, and so. I kind of got off track there. This was started about Hunter Bell, but yeah. Hunter's the same way. When I get a chance, I talk to Hunter because I want to know how can I make my youth athletes better? How can I make my high school kids? Because you look at high school kids, a lot of them, you know, oh, did you do a workout today? Oh, yeah, we went and worked out. Well, did you do your forearms, your core? You do any, you know, jump stuff? You do any you know, like dynamic, like to strengthen your lower half. And, you know, you see the workouts they do and they're like, man, you know, and Hunter's told me, I've talked to Hunter a lot because at some point I want to get with him. And so he can help me be better as a coach. And he's phenomenal though. But what he's done with the team, and just, you see guys come in as freshmen and then you see them now and it's like, wow, they need a different uni because they're outgrowing that one.
Larry Walker fixed your bat once, right?
He did fix it. Yeah, yeah. I tell people that story all the time. He was awesome. So
you talk about YouTube coaches. What's the best thing you've ever learned on YouTube? Are you like one of those?
I don't get on that. I
do it yourself. Learn on YouTube types.
So every time I click on you, like, so my kid will send me YouTube videos all the time. He'll send me stuff about Judge and stuff like that. And it seems like the next video that comes up is Teacher Man. Do you know who Teacher Man is?
I don't know who this is.
Teacher Man's a hitting guy. He's a big fat dude that claims that he taught Judge how to hit. Huh. Now, there's a few things he's got that I believe in, but the way he teaches it, it's flawed in my opinion. He over-teaches it. It seems like that's always the next video. So to answer your question, I don't know that I've ever gotten on YouTube and thought, wow, this is really cool. I like this.
Nothing like around the house that you fix because of YouTube?
No, I Google
I fixed my
that.
Garage door one time. I was actually able to fix my garage door one time with YouTube.
Well, there you go. Maybe I'm missing out. I don't know. So
apparently, YouTube has become kind of the threat to the people who, like, skill workers, and plumbers and electricians and
I ask things Grok. Like that. You ever ask Grok anything?
No, God, no. No. I don't want it to know what I'm thinking. No. No.
Grok knows what I'm wearing right now. That's a little bit scary.
I'll tell you, again, our baseball podcast brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto. Proudly family-owned since 1976, trusted across Northwest Arkansas, committed to keeping you safe on the road all season long. You can learn more or schedule service at hnrtireandauto.com. There is a Razorback connection to Xavier. Doug Willie was their pitching coach for the last 3 years. Now, he's not there anymore. He went and got a bigger job at Virginia Tech last offseason, but he pitched here for one season. I think it might have been the 2016 season that he was here, the one nobody wants to, you know, talk about or remember. And then he came back. He was the bullpen coach for a year. Am I right about that? Didn't he take over for Colby Suggs?
Yeah, he was there because he was here. He must have still been here in 2018 because I got to know him. Because he actually did some training at my facility, and he was really good with the kids. He was really good on the training side of it. Mm-hmm. And so I know he worked a lot with Cooper Dossett when Cooper was coming up. So I actually remember the day Cooper threw 92. I had my little pocket radar, and I got him at 92, and I think I sent it to Hobbs that day. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Doug's done a great job. He left here got in pro ball. I think he elevated through pro ball fairly quickly, then got back into college. And I mean, you don't get a job at a – I know Virginia Tech's not this great baseball program, but you don't get that job if you don't really know what you're doing as a pitching coach, you know, one of those power jobs. The ACC, it's not the SEC, but it's not too far behind when it comes to baseball.
Yeah. No, Doug always did a good job. Always liked him.
Yeah. I think he had a big part in you know, building this pitching staff that's at Xavier. What do you know about the pitcher who's going to throw tomorrow night? It's Ryan Pesch, I think is how you say his name.
I know he's a junior. He's a guy that's I don't think he's going to overpower you. Just looking at his numbers, I pulled up one video. But you know what? You asked me that question. I do occasionally try to pull up a video of a player off of YouTube. If I can't get it on Perfect Game, I go to YouTube and try to pull up a video. So I guess I lied about that. I think he's a veteran guy, knows how to pitch. I think he's going to try to pitch to contact. He's not going to strike a lot of guys out. I think he went, what, four innings last week, struck out two.
Probably on a pitch count.
Yeah, probably didn't throw that many pitches, but I would assume he's a guy that's going to pitch to contact. I think he's a guy that's going to know how to pitch. So, like I said, I think that's – you face a guy like that, and I don't know, I probably shouldn't say this because I haven't really dug into him. Mm-hmm. He probably doesn't have that wipeout pitch that you fear, so you can afford to be a little bit more selective early in the count because you don't worry so much about, oh, he's got this nasty cutter or he's got a high ride fastball it's going to carry that you don't want to get to two strikes. Like a lot of times you don't want to get to two strikes with a guy. This may not be that guy. I don't know. I think if we're patient, I think we're going to put good swings on the ball, and I think we're going to do well.
Okay, so there's a lot of talk this week about two-strike approach because you heard Van Horn, he mentioned it a couple of times down in Arlington that they were going out of the zone way too often and, you know, especially in two-strike situations. So for people who didn't play, explain two-strike approach and what he's talking about when he says it's got to be better.
Well, two strikes. So first two strikes are yours. Third strike's for the team. First two strikes – get a pitch you can drive. If you don't, third strike's for the team. That means you don't want your barrel out front. You got to back contact up. And I heard Dave say it after in Globe Life, saying you shouldn't be hooking balls foul with two strikes. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's a breaking ball you might, but, you know, you got to back contact up, stay on the ball. You kind of flip the field and then, you know, your direction, I call it late fastball timing. We actually did a drill last night where – the whole game, whether you're dealing with high school, college, professional, I mean, hitters are hitters. They all want that little man on your shoulder says, oh, I'm going to get a fastball right here. He beat me with a fastball last at bat. So that little man on your shoulder is telling you, here comes the fastball, and you end up pulling off of a slider away. You just got to do a better job of seeing that ball deep. Mm-hmm. Last night, I wasn't happy with the way we were doing in our games. We're spinning off a lot of balls. So I said, everything, you've got to hit it center, right, center. If you pull it, I don't care if you pull it 500 feet to left field, you're out. And I made the guys back contact up. And sometimes you got to do that. But that's part of just being a good hitter. Still ready for the fastball. You're aware of the fastball. But in the back of your mind, you got to have an idea. Hey, you know, like you look at that Franco guy from TCU. He did a great job. But now he threw really quality pitches down and away. I don't blame that on our hitters. I think you tip your hat to the pitcher right there. But I think we did have some at-bats early in the game where we pulled off of some sliders that were 6-8 inches off the plate. We got to do a better job of that. And I think we will. And I really think that was opening weekend in a major league ballpark. I hate excuses, but, man, you're in a big league ballpark. You want to hit, you know. And I think it just you have a tendency to try to do too much.
Second home run from Ryder Helfrich, I would guess that's the perfect two-strike approach you're talking about because fouls him off and then goes, you know, dead away center with a home run with two strikes.
Yeah, if I asked Grock what's the best two-strike approach, Grock would have said Ryder Helfrich. No, but you're right. That was a great at-bat. But – You see as the at bat goes on, I believe that the more pitches you see, the advantage goes to you without a doubt. Once I see a guy, if I see your breaking ball, if I see your fastball, if I see your changeup, I got you. You know, you might make a good pitch and still get me out, but I feel like the longer I'm at the plate, I'm going to get you. Now, sometimes what guys do, they get in what I call swing mode. Like a Brady Slavens would get in swing mode where he's swinging, you know. Now, you're always on go. It's always yes, yes, yes. But at some point, there has to be a yes, 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 no. Some guys will get in swing mode. You can see them start to climb the ladder, and they keep swinging, and they make it out. But I think the more you're up there, the more pitches you can foul off, the more pitches you can see. I think the advantage definitely goes to the hitter. But I think when a guy's struggling, there's two different approaches. Do you swing your way out of the slump, or do you take your way out of the slump? I like to see more pitches. When I didn't feel good at the plate, I wanted to see more pitches. And so me, 0-0 was 2-0. I wasn't swinging unless it was right where I wanted. I used seven balls across the plate. It had to be 1-4 or you know, 3-6, whatever, before I was swinging. And I felt like that got me back right, because if I'm taking pitches the right way, then I'm hitting the right way. And that goes back to Damon Ruiz. We talked about his weekend. Good hitters are defined by how they take a pitch. You can read a guy's take, and you can tell this guy's a good hitter. You know, if I'm calling pitches for one of my showcase teams and a dude's up there and he's really taking pitches, if I throw a nasty slider away and he takes it like this, I'm like, ooh, you know, he's on it. You know, you got to do something else. And so you can read a lot by how a guy takes pitches.
This follows up on something I think you were just talking about a second ago, but you're about hitters kind of looking for a pitch, staying on a pitch. I'm looking fastball into. How do you kind of split the difference between, let's say, a guy's throwing a really good fastball and he's got a slider, and you're in two strikes. How do you split that difference in terms of being able to hit whatever it is that's coming at you?
Well, you can't sit off speed, and I've heard hitters say. I hear guys on MLB Network and other places say, with two strikes, they sit off speed and they fight off the fastball. I don't think you can do that these days. If you're sitting off speed, you're going to get blown away by a carry fastball, anyone with good velo. You got to be ready for the fastball, but it's late timing. So instead of trying to get your barrel out front, you're back in contact up. So for me, with two strikes, I was a left-handed hitter. I looked at the center fielder. My target was just to the left of the center fielder. That kept me what I call nose over toes. It kept me over the ball. Kept me from pulling off of stuff away, breaking balls. If it's breaking in, then I'm going to stay through it. I'll pull it, but I'll elevate it pull side. I won't dribble it to the right side.
Fascinating.
Yeah, but you don't and I don't know. I'll talk to some of our hitters and see. But I just don't think you can sit off speed. It puts you in what's called a gray area. If you're sitting off speed and you get a fastball, you jump at it. It just forces you to jump at it. Where you got to anticipate the fastball. But I say be ready for the fastball, anticipate the breaking ball, because you've got a pretty good idea. With all the technology we have, we've got a pretty good idea. Runner at third base, less than two outs, 0-2 count, 1-2 count. We got a pretty good idea of what that dude's going to go to, especially when we get into SEC play. Now, still got to do something with it. But, yeah, there's guys that you could almost take because 1-2 count, 86% slider, most of the time in the dirt. Not always, but we've had pitchers we faced before that was kind of their thing. They're trying to get you to chase their pitch. Razorbacks don't do that, though. Hobbs is real big on the race to two strikes and then putting them away quick as possible.
Well, we're inside baseball. Another question for you I had, because this was posed to me several weeks ago. It was after the news had come out that Brenton Clark had hurt his shoulder and he was out for the year. Now, Clark was a different deal because he didn't get hurt on the bases, but a lot of these labrum tears, they've been base running injuries. You know, Nolan Souza's was, Jalen Battles was, Matt Goodhart. I think there might have been one other one in there over the years. So the question was posed, what are the advantages to sliding into a bag feet first or diving into a bag head first?
So a lot of people think it's faster to go head first, and you would think it would be, but it's actually, if you just analytically, if you slide the proper way, feet first is faster. So like right here, see this finger?
Yeah.
That's the middle one.
Shielding it from the camera.
I tore a ligament. Yeah, I shielded that from the camera for the audience. Yeah. I tore a ligament sliding stealing second, sliding in. Second baseman came across, hit my finger, and I still have a pin in there to this day. It took me 2 years to come back from it. No hamstring, sliding head first. Now, I think the exception to that, Matt, is sliding into home plate.
Like the Damian Ruiz play.
The Damon Ruiz. I think the catcher can't block you anymore. Like back the golden rule back when I played is you don't go head first because that catcher's blocking it. Mm-hmm. So you're going to break something.
Yeah.
So we never went head first, but now the catchers can't block the plate. So I think the best slide at home is sliding to the back door of the plate, catching that back edge of the plate with your left hand. Mm-hmm. Because when you slide feet first, a lot of times you don't want to catch a spike on the edge of home plate and break your ankle. Mm-hmm. So your feet end up actually coming over. Mm-hmm. And so now with slow motion technology, mm-hmm. you're not really hitting it until your butt gets there. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to do. Now you can do the slide and then the touch the back with your hand, mm-hmm. go feet first. But I look at the World Series, Game 7, Connor Falefa, the mm-hmm. play where I thought he got a terrible jump at third, mm-hmm. guy bobbles the ball at second, he's out at home. That was the worst feet-first slide I've ever seen. He almost slowed down and stopped and went like this. His feet were off of the ground. If he goes in head first right there, it is game 7 of the World Series.
Yeah.
If he goes in head first, hey, game over. Different, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, different team wins.
That was a very long-winded answer to what should have been a short answer.
No,
to
it's
you.
Good.
So I'm sorry, I got carried away.
But you
there.
See that all the time whenever guys – I say all the time, but you see it sometimes when guys go into home plate, and you're right. Now you've got those – you've got these cameras at the ballpark that are shooting in, mm-hmm. you know, just incredible speed, and they're able to slow it down, and you can see that spike go up, and it doesn't touch the plate, and maybe he misses the plate entirely, or maybe the catcher tags him before he can get that trailing hand to come touch the plate.
Yeah, and, you know, I still go back to Nolan Souza sliding into third last year against Georgia. Man, I got that stuck in my head. I mean, that's the danger of going in head first. But, you know, a lot of guys still do it. And when I played, I thought it was faster to go head first. But the research says feet first is faster.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
But that's one of those things where I feel like as a coach, you have to kind of train your players mm-hmm. and teach them that, because the instinct is that you're going to get there faster if you've got your hands outstretched in front of you.
Yeah, you would think. And it's like first base, you know, sliding into first base. I actually jammed my shoulder sliding head first into first base because I saw the first baseman making a move this way, so I mm-hmm. tried to go around him to the left, ended up hitting the bag and jamming my shoulder into the bag.
Were you trying to be picked off, or was this running from home?
Running from down the first baseline, okay. home to first, and yeah, never slid into first base again.
So I was wondering, because, you know, like there are some people who will say that you should never slide into first. Mm-mm. Like, are you a believer in that now?
Yeah, I think every once in a while, though, if you see that first baseman coming towards you, like to get the throw and maybe make a tag, mm-hmm. you might be able to get down and avoid the tags. Mm-hmm. Or if you see him leaping towards the baseline. It's different now with that extra base. You can probably run on through. But I think there might be a situation every once in a while, but very few far between. It's a dangerous play.
Yeah. Hitting stats right now for Arkansas aren't great. How much of that do you think is the opposition, and how much of it do you think is something that's going on with them hitting? Because, you know, I kind of posed the question to you. Would you feel better about Arkansas right now if they were hitting, you know, 360 as a team, but you go and you play some team from a mid-major conference that's not getting a chance of making the tournament?
Well, it's too early. I mean, you got, what, 15 at-bats?
Yeah.
18 at-bats.
20 at the most, probably.
Yeah. It's way too early, you know. So you look at a guy that's 2-for-10 right now. If he gets two hits, he goes from 200 to almost 400. My math's terrible, but mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, it's way too early. I don't think you start looking at that till you get 40, 50 at-bats into the season.
Okay.
As a hitter, the best advice I could give a college hitter based off experience is if you're 1-for-20, 2-for-20, like mm-hmm. Souza last year got off to a really bad start, mm-hmm. say you're 2-for-20, flush it, start over. I go 10 at-bats at a time. After 10 at-bats, I might be 1-for-10, I might be 6-for-10. Mm-hmm. start over. I'm not hitting 600. I'm hitting zero again and do it 10 at-bats at a time. Mm-hmm. Now, in pro ball, it's a little different. You're getting a lot more bats. You're playing every day, but it works in college ball too.
Yeah. It works in any sport. Yeah. I used to do the same thing with free throws, 50 free throws at a time.
Yeah.
What was the percentage with, you know, 50 free throws is real easy. For every miss, you're 2%, you know.
Because if you get off to – man, if you get off to a bad start, I mean, it can beat you to death because you're thinking, wow, if I get two or three hits here, I'm still only hitting 200. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can wear on you. And then what happens is you go up to the plate and you start hunting hits. And that's the worst thing you can do is going up. And it sounds silly. You don't go up to the plate and try to get a hit. You try to get a good pitch and be on time. Do that, hits will be there.
They got to remind people or tell people, you need to know this too. The game Saturday has been moved to 1 o'clock. It's not 2 o'clock anymore. It's going to be 1 o'clock now. It got moved up because of the basketball game time. The originally, they weren't sure if basketball was going to be at 3 or 3:30 against Missouri. And finally, ESPN made up their mind within the last few days, and they set it at 3. And so now baseball is going to move up to 1 o'clock. Ooh. Hit my microphone. Move up to 1 o'clock on Saturday against Xavier, 3 o'clock on Friday, and noon on Sunday. All right, Bubba, I asked our readers at wholehogsports.com if they had any questions for the podcast, so I got a few for you right here. I haven't given you any forewarning on these, so this is going to be you going off the cuff. Here's an easy one. LD Hog says, does Sonic provide you with hamburgers before games?
No, LD, but that's a great idea. You know how much money I spend in Sonic every season?
Is that like your stop before the games?
It really is. And sometimes I'll get Phil one, too, because when I start eating mine, I feel guilty for him because he's looking over at me like a little puppy. So sometimes I'll get Phil something. But, yeah, it's just easier to just stop in Sonic and get my double smasher, mayonnaise and cheese only, and tater tots and a large sweet tea. So I need a sponsor. I need like a... I need to hold my cup up. Yeah. And
you'd be wearing a Sonic hoodie in here next time.
But
are you superstitious about how you go to the ballpark?
I am more about what I eat.
Okay.
So if we're winning, I will get a double Sonic Smasher every time. Mm. As long as we're winning. If we lose, then I might go to Chick-fil-A. I love Chick-fil-A. I might go somewhere else, but if we're winning, hey, there's no rallies around here.
Yeah.
But when I was playing,
unfortunately, I love that place.
There was a big Buford combo. I don't know if you know what that is. It's a big giant double cheeseburger with all grease coming off of it.
Is this like Buford from Smokey and the Bandit?
I don't know what it is, but it was a big Buford combo. I was on a roll. I was getting hits. And so every day I would stop and I was playing center field at the time. I'd get a big Buford combo on the way to the field. And I'd get a couple hits. Next day, big Buford combo. This went on. We ended up going on the road, come back home. Back there, a couple more hits. And finally, I was ready to not get a hit because after that many big Buford combos, it's hard to go play center field because I started feeling that big Buford combo. So finally, I went 0-for-4, and I was like, yes, I can go get a chicken sandwich now.
You know that scene from Smokey and the Bandit, right?
You know,
Buford T. Justice goes in and gets a cheeseburger and a Dr. Pepper. Not a great
but movie. I am superstitious about a lot of things, and Phil knows. I've got my little hit kit in the booth, and when we need a run, there's certain things I go to.
I feel weird. Like I have a route that I take to the game every game, but there are some times, like maybe once or twice a year, where I'll like be down here at the office before I go, and it just doesn't make any sense to, you know, drive all the way around town to go this, and I just feel really weird going into the ballpark that way. Like I'm very specific. I have to take this exit and this little cut through and go in, you know, this side of the parking lot, and it's strange.
Rumor has it you took a different route in Omaha last year before the LSU game. Don't know if that's true or not.
I don't know. I have no idea.
I stay
at a different hotel in Omaha every year, so it's a different route to the ballpark every year. Whatever keeps me from having to pay $500 a night or something like that. Okay, so here's another one. What's the over-under on home runs and steals for this year's team? I think if I was going with home runs, I would set over-under at 90. They hit 127 last year. That was a lot.
That's a lot.
It was easily the most it ever hit. I think the school, but like pretty consistently since Nate Thompson's been here. They've been a 98 and above home run crew. So, I mean, I would say even if power was down this year, 90, that would probably be a pretty, you know, small number, relatively speaking.
I'll take over 90.
But yeah, I would say. But yeah. I think if you were going to set an over-under number, I think it would be somewhere in that 90 to 95 range.
I think so. And honestly, the wind has a lot to do with it, because there's days where it's hard. You can't hit a ball out of right field.
Hardly. Was it like 2 or 3 years ago? We were talking about the wind every game.
Yeah.
Like, to the point that one of the players told me, it's like the coaches told him, don't talk about the wind anymore in the press conferences.
Yeah, you're right.
We got to quit focusing on this.
Well, and I'm probably guilty of it on the air, because I'm like, oh, any other day, that's out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm probably feeding the monster too. But the wind really does. Like, this is a great weekend to be a hitter. It's cool. And, you know, no one likes hitting when it's cold, but when the wind's blowing out, I think it makes a big difference. I know there's certain ballparks I played in back in the day where when you went to that town, you felt like if you didn't get a couple home runs, you were losing ground on the field. So it's it can make a difference. Now, on stolen bases, how many did we have last year?
That's what I was looking at right here. They had actually more than I thought, 56 in 72 attempts.
I think we're gonna do more than that. You know, I think we're gonna.
They've got the athletes to run this year.
Yeah,
like Ruiz, he feels like one that could really put up some impressive stolen base numbers.
I think so. And you know, the key is you can't steal first, though. You got to get on first base. But I think we're gonna do a lot better job of picking our spots. And, you know, when I'm watching on Flow Sports, I think I said it. Mm-hmm. I said it on Monday. I've got my stopwatch or phone out, and I'm getting times on guys, thinking, okay, this might be a time where Dave. I like trying to guess with Dave when he's gonna go. And you can usually get a pretty good feel if the math works out, they're going to go. Sometimes they do it just based on this guy's going to throw a slider right here when you know their tendencies. But I think we're going to be a lot more aggressive. And you know, I was on Phil's show earlier today, and I wish I would have mentioned it, because I was talking about Damon Ruiz. I didn't even mention his first to third on his show, and I wish I would have, because that's something that goes unnoticed by a lot of people, and that's something that's huge. If you can go first to third with no outs or one out,
yeah,
that is giant. You know, just taking advantage of a lazy outfielder, maybe an outfielder that doesn't feel it, glove side turn, maybe he opens up the opposite way. Once you see him open up non-glove side, you can go.
Yeah,
you know,
that double base advancement is one of the things. Like, everybody, I feel like when a lot of people hear you talk about having a better run game, they automatically think, well, you're going to steal more bases. And that might be true, but it's that first to third. It's what Ryder Helfrich did, where the guy bobbles the ball at third base and he takes second, or you go second to home. I mean, it's like, that's all part of the running game too, and having a more athletic team.
I played for Buddy Bell back in the day, and I loved Buddy Bell, and he was huge on first to third. Not, he didn't steal a lot of bases, but he was big on first to third, just getting to third base before two outs. So it's huge. We worked on it a lot.
So you think more than 55?
Yeah, I think
so. Because
they
had 56 last year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We'll set it at 55. Here's another one. This is from Eldo Hogg. He says, and we talked a little bit about this the other day, the two pitchers that struggled the most were Dossett and Dietz. What are you expecting for? And what do you expect going forward with those two, and with Dietz in particular? What's he need to show to keep being a weekend starter?
Command. No, not command. Control.
Okay.
He doesn't.
What's the difference?
Control's throwing a strike. Command's throwing a strike within a zone.
Okay.
His stuff's good enough. He just needs to throw it over the plate. Remember, I told you about the 94. His stuff's good enough. He can throw it right down the middle.
I'm not worried about Dietz.
I'm not either.
And it's a lot of it's just based on what I saw from him in the preseason. I think that it's – for people who haven't been out there and seen him pitch in the practices, all they know of him is the 1 2/3 innings that he pitched the first 2 years, and now he goes to Arlington and he doesn't get past the second. Like, and so I get it. I get the apprehension with him. I think that at some point – your training is going to show up on the field, and his training has been really, really good.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's going to go out this weekend and deal. I think he's going to get better every outing. The stuff is definitely there. The stuff is phenomenal. And on Dossett, same with him. I think Cooper's
been really good in practice.
Yeah, Cooper's hyped up. You spend that much. Just think how long he spent in the weight room working and just dying to get out there on the mound. And mm-hmm. I guarantee you, it's been a long week for those two guys. I guarantee you, Deitch is dying to get back out there, and Dossett's probably foaming at the mouth to get back out there. I think he's gonna go out and do fine. I still say if that cutter that he threw the guy, I can't remember if it was 1-0 or 0-1, shame on me, but cutter that he hit to second base, mm-hmm. 5 feet the other way, that's a double play ball, and he gets out of the inning, I think. So that's baseball, though. But you know what? Sometimes that's good for you.
Yeah. No, I mean, it like sets you straight, right? Mm-hmm. It resets you. It's ever your priorities in line. It's all about how you can harness the frustration. But I remember when Hagen Smith had the outing against James Madison, about a day or two later, I was talking to a pitcher at a, you know, somewhere, and he said, "I would hate to be Oregon State right now. Hagen is pissed."
Yeah.
And then you saw him go to Arlington, and it was like 15 strikeouts out of – or 17 strikeouts out of 18 outs.
I remember you either wrote that or you told that to me, because I remember that, and I remember thinking that when he got out on the mound and was just on fire.
I mean, I think if you're a good pitcher – and I think Deitch and Dossett are both good pitchers. I especially think so with Deitch, and that's not a knock on Cooper at all. I think Cooper can be really good, but with Deitch, I feel like he is a really high-level pitcher. That's why, you know, all these mock draft things have him being a second-round pick whenever he hasn't thrown more than like 105 pitches in his entire college career. I feel like for those really good pitchers, that kind of outing, look out the next time they come out.
I think
this could be a huge outing for him this weekend against Xavier.
Here, I have a question for you.
Okay, what's that?
It's not something I wrote down, or no one sent it to me, but I just thought of it. What performance is more, and this has nothing to do with this season, Hagen's performance or Gage Woods' performance? Which is more dominant?
Gage.
Because,
it's Gage.
When I saw Hagen's pitch, I said, you will never see a performance that dominant against a really good team.
Yeah.
And then when I saw Gage, I'm like, ooh, okay, you'll never see it. I mean it this time.
How are you ever going to see anything better than that?
Yeah, it was
season's on the line, 118 pitches. He's still throwing like 97 in the ninth inning. And you're doing it at the College World Series with 25,000 people there. I don't care if it was Murray State or if it was Mississippi State. That was an incredible performance.
Okay, let's say it was early on, so we he threw 70 pitches, 70-something pitches, Hagen did. That day?
68.
68? Mm-hmm. Okay. What if Hagen would have been at 105, 110 pitch count?
Oh, God,
how many would he have struck out? Then would we say the same thing?
Well, I mean, he'd struck out 17 through six innings. I mean, you're looking at like a 20-something strikeout game.
Yeah. It could have been at 24.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I mean, it's crazy to think that. And then, I mean, I don't know. God bless him. I love both those outings.
You're right.
And I'm a hitter. I love talking hitting, but boy, I love watching great pitchers go out there. Mm-hmm. Guys that are just they go get it. I love guys like that, and I really think, you know, Deitch doesn't look like a guy on the mound that's got that fire in his eyes, but you know he's
got it in here.
He's got it inside. Yeah,
you can tell.
Yeah, he's a guy that you know he wants to go.
It's going back to being able to harness and like remember you talked about something on Tuesday in here how you loved what Van Horn said about Peyton Lee and not, you know, shaking his head and showing emotions. And I mean, that's one of those things with Deitch. You don't see that with him. It's a very calm exterior. It's like watching the swan out on the water. You know, you look down beneath the water and the legs are going crazy, but like he's able to keep it, you know, very cool and collected and everything up top. And I think it's going to pay off for him.
Yeah, I think so. I really do. I'm looking forward to Saturday.
All right. You think Arkansas will sweep?
Yeah, I really do. I think we're a better team, but team that plays the best wins. Who knows? I think we're going to go out and have a really good weekend. I think the crowd's going to show up, even though it's a little cooler.
Mm-hmm.
I think the guys are dying to play at Baum Walker, especially the new players. Mm-hmm. I think we'll go out and take care of business.
People are going to be fired up to be out there. It's a different – I don't know. It's a different feel whenever they've seen them play somewhere else, and now they get to kind of receive them as opposed to – hey, it's opening day. I don't know. I feel like there's a little bit more fire in the ballpark on the second weekend when the team's making its home debut.
Yeah, I do too. Do you get butterflies?
No.
First game?
I don't.
No.
No. No, I don't. But I don't eat Sonic Double Smashers either. So Maybe that's where your butterflies are coming from.
You call help when you get a turtle in the yard, too.
I shouldn't have done that. All right, I want to tell you one more time that our baseball podcast is sponsored by H&R Tire and Auto, local tire shop that's been family-owned for three generations. They've built their reputation on taking care of customers the right way, and that kind of longevity doesn't happen by accident. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. We'll talk Razorback basketball ahead of their game against Missouri. We'll look back at Alabama with Anthony Christensen. He'll be back from Tuscaloosa. Hope to see you then or at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everybody.